means planning a life for two. Being together the whole day through. True love means waiting and hoping that soon wishes we've made will come true.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Ronnie.
Hey, Paula.
Hello, Ronnie.
Let me give a formal introduction to these two individuals, and so that there is no identity crisis, I'm going to tell you right off the bat that their real names are not Paul and Paula. And one of the problems I'm going to have, I got to tell the two of you, is that I'm going to be popping a lot of peas tonight. Paul, Paula, I always have this problem.
I had that problem, Ronnie, when I recorded the song, so you're in good company.
If you were Ray and Jill, this show would be a lot easier, but no, you're Paul and Paula. I'm going to first introduce the gentleman whose real name is Ray Hildebrand, and he's a.k.a. Paul of the duo Paul and Paula. How you doing, Ray?
I'm doing just grand, and you know, that little song has been a great blessing in my life, and so I'm just so thankful that we're talking today.
So am I. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a proper introduction to the lady whose music I admire so much. Her real name is Jill Jackson, and she is a.k.a. Paula.
Hello.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Ray, how and when did you come up with the song, Hey Paula?
Well, a friend of mine named Russell Berry, he was a basketball playing teammate of mine, had a friend who was a friend of the girl that broke up with me. My friend's name was Judy and his friend was named Paula, and they were buddies, and he was afraid that she was going to be running off during the summer, you know, loving somebody up there, and so he wanted me to write a song for her so he could sing to her or whatever, and he was just kind of joking with it. I took it seriously, and I wanted to help him save his relationship, so I tried to write a song for Russell to sing to Paula, and thanks to Annette Funicello and a song called Tall Paul that was being played at the swimming pool where I was lifeguard. Well, I couldn't find anything that fit with Russell. So I threw Russell out and put Paul in from her deal and wrote this movement. It was a long song. That's where the motivation for even writing the thing came from.
Wow.
In the first place. And how did I know much about love? I was still in love with this Judy and that ran off back to her hometown. And so with the feelings that I had for her, I wrote this little song.
Well, this is weird because actually what you're telling me is that this song was written before there was ever a Paul and Paula. It was not written for Jill. It was written for a different Paula. That's an interesting story.
Well, it is. You never know what's going to happen, you know.
Jill probably just found this out, that she always thought that this was written for her. Jill hasn't said a word. You see, Paul?
Yep.
There you go. In the beginning, there was no Paul and Paula.
In the beginning, it all began in a small town out in West Texas called Brownwood, which is not far from Abilene, not too terribly far from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, straight west. And Paula, or Jill and I, were both in college in 1962 at Howard Payne College, which is now a university after many years. And I had broken up with my girlfriend, and she took off because I didn't have any money. I was staying over an extra year to finish up my degree at this little college, and Jill lived in the town, and again, I was from another town in Harlingen in the Rio Grande Valley, but she walks up to me, and I don't know if it was at the swimming pool where I was a lifeguard or whether it was on the campus or whatever, and asked me to help her record a radio show that she had been given the opportunity to have on a little radio station in Brownwood, and I knew she was a singer, and I sang with a group called The Prisoners, a couple of guys on campus, and Jill was what I call a vamp singer, and she'd been singing since she was 4 years old. She was fantastic. She was in the choir at Howard Payne and everything else, so I knew her, and she was a beautiful brunette, and when a beautiful brunette asks you to help her on a radio show, you must do that, and so I said yes, and so that's kind of how we started, in my humble opinion.
Uh-huh. Jill, was there a particular reason that you wanted this guy to sing with you? Did you like his voice?
I loved his voice, and I had met Ray when I was a freshman in college and knew that he was a really good singer and did quite a bit of things on campus and played a really good guitar, and I just had a feeling that our voices would really sound good together. I guess I was right, huh? The thing that happened that got everyone excited was on this little radio show, we did Hey Paula one day. And
we called it Paul and Paula, remember?
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Paul and Paula. And there was a DJ there at KEAN called Ronnie Jordan, and he actually made us do this song because he just loved it. And so Ray played guitar, and we sang this song. And Ronnie said that the lights at the station just lit up. Everybody was phoning in and wanting to know what that song was, and it really got everyone excited.
Now, I understand that the way your recording career actually happened is that you dropped by unannounced at a small studio. What was the reason? Why did you drop by unannounced? What were you planning on doing? I'll ask that to Paul or Ray.
Oh, no, you need to ask Paula that, because it was her mama's fault, and she was there, and it was she and her mama's fault, so Paula...
It wasn't my fault.
Okay.
My mother heard of a recording studio in Fort Worth, so we went up there and recorded it. And Ray, do you want to take over from there?
Well, yeah, what happened was they called me. I was, you know, running around with the guys and everything, and I certainly didn't want to drive up to Fort Worth, Texas or anything, but undoubtedly Jill's mom, Loris, wonderful, sweet musician in her own right and everything else. We'd all knew about Bruce Chanel and his Hey Baby song the year before out of McKinney, Texas, and Jill's mom began to call around. She's really the one that instigated this. I don't think, am I right? We wouldn't have done this.
No.
She called around and checked around, and who does this kind of stuff? Because she thought Ronnie was telling the truth, this Ronnie Jordan. She said, people are calling in. These kids love this song. We think you should record it. So she found out who does that kind of stuff, and that was this guy, Major Bill Smith, who had this hit song back when, and a guy that helped him was another guy that was with a group called the Light Crust Doughboys out of Texas. Anybody from Texas way back when, you know, baby boomers would remember them, and he was a studio musician. And so she talked to this Marvin Montgomery, Smokey Montgomery, who's a legend in the industry there, and he said, well, Major Bill's going to record this fella about 6 o'clock on a Thursday night or whenever it was, and he said, that's all I can tell you. That's all the information she had. They came by, it was Saturday, wasn't it, Jill?
Uh-huh.
They came by and said, get your clothes. It's early in the morning. I lived with her aunt at a boarding house, so they knew where I was. They came by and said, get your clothes on. We're going to Fort Worth, Texas, early in the morning. So we took off. She and I were in the back seat, and Mom and Dad in the front seat, Ralph, her dad. And we showed up at this recording place, a basement of a radio station, KFJZ in Fort Worth, Texas. And we waited, and we waited, and we waited. And when 6 o'clock finally rolled around, the amazing thing, Ronnie, was, talk about a God thing, the guy that was supposed to record that day didn't show up. And guess who was standing there? And we walked in, and the rest is history.
When you recorded, you were still Ray and Jill?
Yes.
Yes.
Good. Thank you, Jill and Ray.
I do remember that we went up to Fort Worth with only one song, which was Paul and Paula. And Bill Smith said, well, don't you have anything else to put on the B-side?
Major Bill Smith.
And, you know, we went, duh. I had written this song.
I didn't, but she did.
Called Bobby is the One. Uh-huh. And so that happened to go on the backside of Hey Paula, because that was the only song we had. It just all worked. It was just one of those things that just was meant to be.
Now, see, on the flip side, she sang that one by herself.
Yes, I did.
You listen to that, I think it's as pretty as any of her other things that she did. It's a beautiful song. Could have been a hit, and we wouldn't be talking, you know.
Yeah.
But thank you, honey.
Wow, that's...
That's the truth, dude.
The artists were identified still as Paul and Paula, even though he had nothing to do with it except maybe just watching you.
Well, yeah. See, he put it out as a press break. He did not give us anything. We walked out of there. We did go over and sign some contracts before we drove back to Texas, but he didn't give us anything that I recall.
No,
And he put out a little press record, a song. He called it Paul and Paula by Jill and Ray, and had it played around on some of the Texas stations that he had powers with.
Okay, what label was it on then?
LeCam, capital L-E, capital C-A-M.
Hey Baby was on that originally too, wasn't
it? Yeah, at first it was played, like I said, on the LeCam thing, and on a few stations that he had some local power with. It was Paul and Paula by Jill and Ray, and he said, I'm sending you $500 a piece. Mercury has picked up this thing.
And the record became officially released on the Philips label.
And he says, it's the hottest thing going. You got the greatest record in the world, and we're going to go do some promotional tours along the East Coast. He said, no more is the song called Paul and Paula. It's going to be called Hey Paula, and you're not Jill and Ray anymore. You are Paul and Paula and your sweetheart. Get it? You'll be flying out of here in a week.
Hey, hey, Paula, I want to marry you. Hey, hey, Paula, no one else could ever do. I've waited so long for school to be through. Paula, I can't wait no more for you. My love.
Especially happy about that because I see the writing credits on this say Ray Hildebrand.
Mm-hmm.
More money for you and you. That's great to be the writer of a number one hit song as well as the artist.
If it lasts as long as Hey Paula did, I'd do it again.
Yeah. Now, the interesting story, this is something interesting. The song Hey Paula, a couple of interesting things. Number one, you don't open the record with Hey Paula, you say Hey, hey, Paula. Do you have any idea why you did that? Two Hays?
If we could all go back and change things, we probably would, but I have no idea. It seemed like the right thing to do at the time, you know, because I didn't even know how we were going to do the song. This Smokey Montgomery that I mentioned earlier, he took the song that I gave him, and he took out half of it, and he said, and Major Bill made him do that because he says, it's too long, and he said, take this. He flipped the lead sheet over to him, the words, and he says to Marvin, he said, Marvin, change this and make it, you know, because we don't have time for a seven-minute song. There's no seven-minute songs, and so he cut it out. He made it into what it was. Here's exactly what he said. He said, now, quiet in the studio. Ray's going to start this out. 3, 4, and I screwed up, and I popped a couple of P's, like you're doing, Ronnie.
Yeah.
And then I started over here, so it seemed like the right thing to do. Hey, hey, and then it went into it. That's all I remember. I no particular other than that, you know.
That's really wild. Before we get to the follow-up, which was actually a part of Hey Paula that was kind of ripped off from Hey Paula and actually made into a different song, I want to point out that on the 25th anniversary of Elvis's death, Priscilla Presley said in a TV interview that one of her husband's favorite songs was Hey Paula. Also, I understand that the brother of country singer Kenny Rogers named his twins Paul and Paula after the song. So the song has a wonderful history, wonderful legacy. And Young Lovers came about because Hey Paula was too long, so you couldn't use all the lyrics in Hey Paula. And what better way to take advantage of that situation was to kind of just rip off the sheet and say, okay, we got a second song here. Isn't that pretty much what happened, and you got Young Lovers out of it?
It was a chorus, really, you know, the longer part of the song. And so, as I recall, Jill, correct me if I'm wrong, Paula, but in the back seat going to the airport, we put two more verses to it, and that was Young Lovers.
I think the most memorable line from the song is, good luck to Paul and Paula.
I think that song is absolutely beautiful, and I can remember recording it. We were in Nashville, and they had violins and things that we didn't get to use on Hey Paula, because that was just kind of a demo to begin with. And I sat there, and I thought, I've never heard anything so pretty. It was just absolutely beautiful. The words were very, very pretty. The melody was beautiful, and I just thought, oh, my goodness.
We know that our love will last. Paula, I give you my heart. Yours in return's all I ask.
We've waited so long for this moment. Special day, I'll take you home, and you only here in my heart you will stay. So good luck to Paul
and Paula.
Good luck, young lovers everywhere.
Well, it did very well. It became a top 10 hit. Ray, two in a row there. You were not one-hit wonders.
That's right.
At that point, you were two-hit wonders, Paul and Paula and Young Lovers. And they lived happily ever after. Well, not quite, because shortly after they did Young Lovers, they had their first quarrel. And in fact, there's a very interesting story about first quarrel that doesn't even have to do with the recording session. It has to do with something that happened when you appeared on American Bandstand. And what I'm going to do, Paul, is play just a little segment. Before I play it, though, what was Dick Clark trying to present you with?
Take it, Paula.
He was presenting us with our $1 million record. It was a Lucite record that I have it, but I can't remember what
big
it says. But it verified
$1 million. Of America, yeah.
What?
Yeah, we're talking at the same time here. I'm just enjoying this. Okay. It was a Lucite record.
It was a Lucite record on a platform, and when he handed it to us, it fell off and hit the ground.
This is one of Dick Clark's bleeps, bloops, and blunders.
Oh my! How are you both? I just ought to patch up your... We broke it already. We dented it. No. Joe, we did it. We got to get him a new one. What happened? May I inquire? It got loose? This is one of those days, you know? Well, before we drop it again, you know what I was going to do? When I brought it, I was going to bring it out in two pieces and hand you half, say, let's not have any fights. It would have been better.
That is hysterical.
Historical and hysterical.
So what happened? Did they get super glue and put the pieces together?
Well, Dick guaranteed us that he would get it fixed, and he did. And he really felt badly about it.
He brought in all the king's horses and all the king's men, and they were able to put it back together.
They just kind of chipped one of the corners of it. But I tell you what happened on that. It made him feel so bad that he interviewed us extra long.
Oh, yeah.
And he let us show our new album, which was against rules of whatever.
It was considered advertising. I guess that was the reason.
Yeah.
Like a free plug or something like that.
It was against it. He said, I'll go ahead and show it. And he let me show the new album that we had coming out. We go together.
The record that you were promoting at that time was your third single called First Quarrel. You didn't actually write the song, Ray, right?
No. It was a friend of Major Bill Smith who did high school band music there in Fort Worth. That's all I remember. Maybe somebody else will remember his name. Well, his name's on the...
It's on the record, yeah.
We're going to take a listen to it right now. I mean, this kind of reflects real life. How many couples out there have never had a first quarrel? Not too many. Paul and Paula, and this was a hit in the summer of 1963. This is First Quarrel.
First quarrel today. I threw your picture away. I'm sorry I made you cry.
Forgive me, so am I.
We had our first quarrel today. I thought I saw you with Jim.
I was just talking with him.
Well, I guess I had it wrong.
I should have been at home.
We had our first quarrel today. What may seem wrong at the time is about.
I don't remember now.
We had our first quarrel today. What may seem wrong at the time isn't always true. All about.
I don't remember now.
We had our first quarrel today.
Well, that song is First Quarrel, but the happy thing about it is, had a happy ending, you forgave each other. That was it. I find intriguing about the lyric to that song is, in the beginning of the song, you tell what the quarrel was about, and then later in the song, you say, what was it all about? So it's kind of almost a contradiction. What was it all about? I don't remember now.
It's like a setup and a payoff in a movie. You don't have much time, you know. So whatever you're going to do, you got to do it quick.
I am Ronnie Allen, and I am delighted to be sharing with their fans throughout the world the Paul and Paula story. A lot of people thought that you were romantically attached. Were there newspaper articles that you were some sort of an item or at that point?
Go ahead.
Take it.
Nobody wants to talk about this, so we move right on.
That's true. That's the very thing that Major Bill told us when he made that illustrious phone call. saying, we're sending you $500 a piece, and get ready because you're now Paul and Paula and your sweethearts. Get it? They advertised us. I don't know if it was that big of a pressure thing to Paula, and you'll have to ask her, but I wasn't able to talk about the truth about things. Tell them that you wrote the song for her. Tell them what they want to hear. So they kind of said we were sweethearts for, you know, however long it was there. Mm-hmm. That's the best I remember. That was part of our mystique.
But you know what? People still think we got married. So
and lived happily ever after, yeah.
Yeah.
But back then, were you instructed by the people around you that if interviewers asked questions, you were supposed to pretend that you were going steady?
No. Mm-mm.
So did you
I don't remember anything like that.
Well, Major Bill kind of told me, I mean, Jill was in the bathroom or something, but he told me, you know, he said, you know, you need to act like y'all are sweethearts and keep this thing going. That's kind of, you know, I don't know if it came down from the record company or what.
First Quarrel was the third one we played, and now we're going to play another first song. After Paul and Paula had their first quarrel, they had their first day back at school. Anybody want to take that?
I will take that. My mother wrote that whole song. She just did a great job. She's very talented. She is 87 years old now and presented me with about 4 or 5 albums of Paul and Paula, newspaper clippings and things that she's kept over the years. So we were really her pride and joy, and she contributed from the very beginning.
First day back at school, I saw you standing there. I saw your big brown eyes and loved your raven hair.
You didn't know it, but I saw you in your little sweater of gold and blue. Your big broad shoulders and your flashing eyes, I picked you out from all the other guys.
If you wear this ring for me, then we'll go steadily.
After you draw to an end, I'll be wearing you for certain. Then one day when we're out of school and our campus days are through, we'll be making all our future plans to be wearing matching wedding.
You had this image of Paul and Paula, but at some point you must have realized, well, this is probably not going to last for years and years and years. Because how much can you do as Paul and Paula doing all of these songs about various things in your life? But after a while, don't you kind of run out? Unless you do a song called Paul Take Out the Garbage or something. But basically, these were all love songs or quarrel songs. They were all... they had kind of a sameness to them. I mean, each of them took the story a little bit further, but they were all Paul and Paula, domestic, whatever you want to call
it. I remember, Ray, we were in Nashville, Tennessee. We were, I think, recording another song, and we were sitting eating lunch at the hotel. I think it was with Shelby Singleton. And First Quarrel had just come out. And I remember hearing this girl behind us say, have you heard the new record of Paul and Paula? It's called First Quarrel. What are they going to do now? after first quarrel. They're going to get divorced or something. I remember saying, and then get married and then have a baby and then the lives. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I wonder what people are thinking songs. We're living through our songs.
Well, you were not married at that point. Hey, Paula, I want to marry you, but you were not married.
Something old, something new.
Takes it to the next level. And that's the next record we're going to get to. You recorded a song called Something Old, Something New, which I guess took it to the next plateau, so to speak.
That's right.
I think it's one of the prettiest songs that you've done. And who
it's
funny, because at the time, I don't think I really thought that much about what they were doing. I mean, the plan, and you asked the question, well, how long are you going to run that Paula Paula thing? We both just liked to sing. We were out there singing, you know. Maybe Jill recognized it. I didn't necessarily agree with the songs that they were putting out on us, because I wanted something funky like Hey Baby or something, you know. But I think you're right. They were trying to keep us in a little fantasy world or something.
Right. And you were not necessarily 100% in favor of it then. Maybe we should do something a little bit different.
Branch out a little bit.
Yep.
Let's take a listen to Something Old, Something New, Paul and Paula.
Something old. Something borrowed,
something blue.
My love will always be true, Paula. I love you.
A book that's old, a ring that's new, a borrowed necklace of sapphire.
Something Old, Something New actually came out before First Day Back at School. That's kind of interesting. Something Old, Something New is kind of a marriage song.
They were jumping the gun, weren't they? Somebody didn't have their head in the ball game there.
You'll be wearing my fraternity pin, but isn't that something that she would be doing before you get married, I would think?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So we're not going to pretend that these songs were necessarily released in the correct order. But it's the order in which I'm playing them, and that's the only thing that counts.
Right.
Because what I tried to do is I tried to put the Paul and Paula story in the correct order, even if the records were not released in the correct order. Right. Now that I've said that, I want to play the flip side of Something Old, Something New. Paul, you know where I'm coming from on this one. Back in 1961, as recording artist Ronnie Allen, I recorded one single, and the A side of the single was a song that I wrote called Flip Over You, present tense. Little did I know that the two of you, 2 years later, were going to record a song called Flipped Over You, a totally different song. Was that written for you?
I don't know.
We were presented with these songs, Ronnie, and would never know really the songwriter. And our record producer would just gather these songs and say, let's do this. So we'd learn them, and that's what we'd do.
Over you.
Imagine I'm a girl.
Flipped over you.
My head is in a whirl.
I love you so.
I feel the same as you.
make my heart a show.
You're such a dream.
I love your loveliness.
The greatest I've seen.
Yes, baby, you're the best.
You got love, you got style.
I love your face, I love your style.
Maybe we belong together. Kiss me good, hold me tight.
Just like this, every night.
Let's be proud of making love forever.
Flip over you.
We're going steady now.
You are my girl.
I'll stick with you in half.
Baby, it's true.
I feel the same way too.
I'm flipped over you.
Well, myself and Paul and Paula are the only ones in the world that have records about flipping over you, I guess.
Yeah.
We're now going to talk about, and we're not going to belabor this, but obviously it's something that I do have to cover, and I think that everybody is sitting at the edge of their seats because they're waiting to hear this story. First of all, how many times did you do Bandstand?
I think three the first time with the Hey Paula. I'm pretty sure we also went for Young Love.
Young Love.
And then First Quarrel.
And First Quarrel
was when he dropped our award. I'm pretty sure that was our third time.
Okay. Now, you also got to work with Dick in another capacity on the Dick Clark Caravan of Stars.
Yep.
I want to point out that the Caravan of Stars was a bus tour, and you went from one place to another in these comfortable buses, right?
Oh, not bad.
Not bad? Okay.
I guess they were Bluebird buses. They weren't too bad. I've ridden in worse.
But I mean, basically, you do a show, hop in the bus, and then you travel for a few hours and
go to another city.
Usually.
And one after another, and you never really knew for sure where you were.
Oh, you had to watch it. You'd say, it's sure good to be here in Atlanta when you were in Cincinnati.
Did that ever happen?
Not to me.
Good. When did it happen, Paul, that you made a fateful decision?
Well, Jill, she may not remember, but she knew. I had gotten back with Judy, the girl that I had broken up with, and that and RCA was coming down heavy on us to try to get us away from Major Bill Smith, the old boy that was our Colonel Tom Parker, you know, that brought us to the dance and all. And on that interview with Dick Clark that you have, Ronnie, Dick asked Jill about touring and everything. She says, I'm so homesick. and she said, but do you get homesick? I'm just so homesick. I said something silly about, she's a mama's girl. She'll always be home, you know. But I was homesick myself. I wasn't raised to travel all the time, and I was tired of the traveling, and it wasn't even very far into our career. I think maybe if some counselor had said, hey, you're going to do this for a couple of years, make as much money as you can, and write some songs, and maybe I'd have listened, I don't know. But long story short, I'd had enough, and I knew I was going to lose my, we were doing well, our careers were doing well, and we were going to, you know, RCA, when the flagship of the music industry is trying to get a hold of you and trying to sign you away from this guy. And I didn't know what to do. And when I was with Jill and I were talking to them, and I was all for it. And then I was so wishy-washy. I was a basket case. And if I had it to do over again, I would have certainly done it differently, you know, when you go back. But one morning early, and one of the stops on that tour was Cincinnati, Ohio. And when I got there, and it was about, Jill will tell you from her version how many days were left, I wrote a note to her, and I think a note to Dick Clark, stuck it under the door early in the morning, and I left her stranded on this tour, and I went back home and started over again, and that's kind of what happened, and it was terrible, and it was, so take it, Paul.
What can I say? What happened?
From your point of view.
From my point of view? I knew Ray, I mean, traveling at that speed that we were going, you know, city to city and concert, I mean, we really stayed on the road a lot, and I know we both got tired, everyone did, and I knew that's how Ray felt, but the fact that he did what he did, it kind of shocked me, to be honest.
Terrible.
And he and I have talked about this, so he knows how I feel. And I know if he had it to do again, he probably would not have done it that way. But we still had about a week and a half or 2 weeks of the tour left, so I didn't know what to do. I went to Dick Clark, and I said, Dick, do you want me to leave and just go home because I don't have Paul, and I don't know what to do. I'll do the best thing for the show. So he said, you know what, I'll just sing with you. So he did Hey Paula with me the rest of the show and did a fabulous job and made me feel comfortable because I was scared. I was all alone. I felt abandoned. I didn't know what to do. So I just kind of let him take the lead, and Dick just made it all work.
Did Dick actually sing it, or did
he?
Oh,
absolutely, and he did a wonderful job. He has a very nice voice, and probably knew it anyway because he'd been playing it for so many years.
I would think so. On the tour, did you do more than one song, or just the one song?
I did a couple of things by myself at that time.
Okay, so you only needed him for that one song.
Then. Yeah, Dick just did Hey Paula.
Now, you eventually at some point talked about this with Paul, and you kind of patched things up and everything, both of you, in terms of...
We didn't have any children.
had
a Christmas.
They had some children, ladies and gentlemen. No, nobody knew about this.
There was a lot more to this story. Now, we had a Christmas album scheduled to do in Nashville called Holiday for Teens. Jill and her mom came. They hugged me and they forgave me for being such a, you know. But, you know, it was never quite the same because I was tired and they knew it. And I think we went to Japan after that. We did some more things.
Right.
But it was never, you know, when you run off from a Dick Clark tour, the other promoters hear about it, and you don't get a lot of gig offers after that. They think you're a loose cannon or something. So I kind of affected her career. That's kind of my outlook on what happened.
Did Dick Clark ever talk to you about it after it happened? Did Dick forgive?
Oh, yes.
What I want to do before we close with a few more Paul and Paula records, I want to play a solo record by Jill Jackson. I want to play a solo record by you, Ray.
Okay.
And then we'll kind of finish off the show with some more Paul and Paula selections. Jill, you recorded a song called Hey Handsome Boy, and I know this song is kind of special for you. I think you recorded it while you were still working with Ray?
Yes, I did.
You tell me a little bit about Hey Handsome Boy.
Well, it was about Ray, of course.
It was.
It was really a cute song. Hey Handsome Boy. I mean, I can still remember the word. It's just adorable. And I did that song on an album of ours. Why I did it by myself, I don't know. But that was what I was given to do, and that's what I did.
Who wrote the song?
My mother.
I told you, that's the second song.
I know.
Yeah, she wrote
First Day Back at School.
She did.
And she wrote Hey Handsome Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Ray, this one is for you.
Handsome boy.
That was Jill Jackson.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Good night. On the Dick Clark Show, there was one thing that I found kind of intriguing. Dick asked you about your height differential. Jill, you were about 5'1", was it, at the time?
5'1½", thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She's grown.
If I'm gonna, yeah.
You said 5'1" on the interview.
I did. There.
Well, that's what I mean. I didn't know. I didn't know you grew a half an inch since then. Forgive me. Bite my
feet. Her feet are swelling.
Okay. Now, Ray, did you lose any inches?
I'm about 6'2½", 6'3". Always been about 6'6".
6'2½". Wait a minute. She gained a half an inch, and guess what? She took it from you.
That's where
Ray shrunk. He's just
too much jumping up and down.
You said on the show you were 6'3". Now, well, maybe 6'2½". There. Now we know where you got your what we got it from. Anyway. All right.
That's a whole foot, isn't it? Is it not?
Well, but
10 inches.
It's not as obvious when you're sitting down. For example, on your first album, you had the picture of you with the soda.
We Go Together album cover.
We go together. And who drank all that soda, by the way, Jill?
Ray.
Okay.
I resemble that remark.
Didn't leave. Thank you. Yeah, Ray didn't leave any for you.
No, he didn't.
No.
I'll tell you, working in a hot studio, all these pictures, it works on your thirst.
Well, it might, but Ray, you should have left her at least a couple of drops, for Pete's sake. I mean, because she was working in the same hot studio that you were.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Well, you know, I'm just, you know, taking your side, you know? I mean,
yeah, thanks.
What's he going to do? You know, I know he's bigger than me, but, you know, this is a phone interview, so he can't do anything.
This is true.
All right. We're going to now turn to Ray for a song that you wrote. It was actually a Christian song, but it was turned into a country hit when Ray Price recorded it.
That's right.
And the name of the song is...
Say I Do.
You didn't write it, actually, with the intention of writing a country song, right? You wrote it as a Christian song. Was this for a Christian album that you were doing?
Yes.
And what
back in 1967, after we went our separate ways, sort of. So
you did this Christian album. What was it called?
I Need You Every Hour.
We're going to hear your original version of the song. This is your rendition, Ray Hildebrand, and Say I Do.
Many years have come and gone since he walked upon our ground. They say lies don't last so long, so why's his story hanging around? And why do people stop and pray to a man that's dead and gone? When I ask them, they just say, he's coming back to take me. Anybody here wanna live forever? Say I do. Anybody here wanna walk on golden streets? Say I do. Anybody here sick and tired of living like you do? Anybody here want a home with love forever? Say I do. And they say you will never know till you walk up to that man and you look into his eyes of love and you touch the nail scars in his hand. And if you can walk away knowing all he died to do, that's when I'll just have to say, I guess he didn't die for you. Anybody here wanna live forever? Say I do. Anybody here wanna walk on golden streets? Say I do. Anybody here sick and tired of living like you do? Anybody here wanna home with love forever? Say I do.
Did you and Jill actually break up at any point? Was there a point where you were no longer singing as Paul and Paula for a while?
After we did our Christmas album, we at least got back together and hugged. You know, I didn't want to do it much anymore. And she read the handwriting on the wall, and so she and her cousin went out to seek their fortune. And that's when she had a career out in California, and they met their husbands, and la, la, la.
And life changes.
Life changes.
And also the music.
Back, I'm kind of, yeah. In some ways, if it hadn't happened, maybe they'd have never met, and la, 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 I feel responsible for her. No.
Absolutely.
Right. We're going to finish off the show with a few more records by Paul and Paula. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, I am talking to Ray Hildebrand, who is Paul, and Jill Jackson, who is Paula. And they answer to either of those names.
Well, it's Jill Jackson Landon.
Okay, let me mention that.
For 43 years.
Okay. There's kind of an interesting coincidental thing with that name Landon, in that, Ray, you recorded as part of an act which was not Landon, but it was Land.
Land and Hildebrand. One of my career.
Yeah, not Landon Hildebrand. It was Land and Hildebrand. Land has nothing to do with Landon, except the
name. That's right. I never thought of that.
The name's
good, Ronnie.
From your Land and Hildebrand days, you recorded a couple of songs that were kind of goofy. I guess they were kind of Christian songs, but they can be appreciated by people of all denominations, really. And I'm just going to play a little bit of Dog and a little bit of Cat. Is that okay?
That's fine. Yeah, you probably have a hard time finding any Christian message in there at all.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Land and Hildebrand with a wonderful song with a great message, and it's called Dog.
She said, I'm tired of being treated like a dog. I'm out of here. And when I heard those words, it made me perk up my ears. It's true, she'd been mistreated, but what she said was wrong. If you treated her like a dog, she'd never gone. If he had rolled around and played with her on the floor down in the bin, taking her out for nice long walks, giving her a bath, and then dried her off and rubbed her tummy, scratched her behind the ear, I'll bet you a bag of kennel ration that she'd still be here. If he had only treated her like a dog, happy ever after would have been their epilogue. She'd never strayed away from home. She'd wagged her tail and tagged along. If he'd only treated her like a dog.
And now here's Land and Hildebrand with a wonderful song with a great message, and it's called Cat.
Well, I was snoozing on the sofa when she came in from work. She started baby talking before she laid down her purse. How's Mama's boogie woogie? How's her big sweetie pie? I kind of smiled and opened one eye. Did Mommy's hunky lovey-dovey have a hard day? I just about to answer yes when I heard her say, well, him so fat and lazy, but him's cute as can be. That's when I knew she wasn't talking to me. I wish she talked to me like that. Didn't care where I scratched or sat. Just gave me praise for being lazy and fat. But she only talks that way to the cat. She only talks that way to the cat.
Ray, I want to ask you about your website. What is it called?
It's called RayHildebrand.com.
I should probably spell Ray, R-A-Y.
R-A-Y.
Hildebrand, H-I-L-D-E-B-R-A-N-D.
That's exactly right, and it talks about all three of my careers, at least, because I have some fans and said I'm a very well-kept secret.
Ray's careers are as a member of the duo Paul and Paula, as a Christian singer, and as a comedian. Those are the three?
Yeah. Landon Hildebrand was the last one. It was kind of a Christian Smothers Brothers.
Smothers Brothers. So actually what I said that to be funny, but it was actually true, yeah. As it turns out. You don't have a website, Jill, right? There's no Jill.
I don't have a personal website. I know that I should get one of those going, but I just haven't done it. But I know I get a lot of comments on the Internet with the Paul and Paula stuff, and I should really do that. I'll work on that.
So if you want any Jill Jackson solo hits, write me. I'll make all the money. No, just kidding.
Okay.
She's okay with it. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Let's talk about your respective families, if you'd like, Jill.
You know, I've been married for 43 years to the same man. What is funny, there's a bio on Paul and Paula, and it says that I married my manager, and I divorced him and married an attorney. And neither one of those are true. And what happened was that was Dick and Dee Dee. Dee Dee married our manager. We had manager.
Dee Dee Phelps.
Yeah, but I've been married to my husband for 43 years. We have two beautiful children, and we have four grandchildren. Mm. And we live in L.A., that's it. That's my career.
What about you, Ray?
I married the girl that I mentioned earlier named Judy that basically was the heart and soul of the song, and when I wrote it for her friend Paula, and we were married for 35 years. She died of cancer back in 99, but Jill and I both, our oldest child was a girl. Her daughter was Bliss. My daughter was Heidi. I'd put those two daughters this very day up against anybody in the country, two of the most beautiful girls in the world, and we both had sons, and her son is Hayden, and my son is Michael, and they're both handsome, neat guys with wonderful wives, and my son has four children and wants more. So they live in Olathe, Kansas, and I live with my daughter and son-in-law right now. I'm talking to you from their home. Got another lady. I'm a widower, and I'm dating a lady named Mary Jo that's a widow, and I may marry her one of these days, so ha-ha.
She may be listening. Obviously, with the success of American Idol, one of the judges, I'm not talking about Simon or Randy, so I must be talking about Paula, and I wonder if there's, as a result of Paula being on that show, and people have probably said, hey, Paula, and she was involved with something recently, I would assume that's brought more awareness to the song, right?
I think so. You know, she never asked our permission, and I don't know that she had to, but...
She had a show. Was this a TV show?
Yeah, and
it was called
TV Guide, which went out nationally, had a big article on her with pictures and everything else, but it's strange that it would mention our song in there. If she didn't know about our song, why did she call it Hey Paula, right? Because it was our song that was out in the marketplace and has been alive for 45 years. If she had a hit thing on that, we'd have to come back knocking on her door, you know, because most people on the street remember our song, and she was kind of, you know, riding on our shirt sleeves, but I knew her show probably wouldn't go that well, so we left it alone. We didn't say anything about the movie that we're trying to put together now, but we're trying to put together a true love story, and all this stuff that we've been saying is going to be in this movie that comes out one of these days. Hey, Paula, or hey, Paula.
Well, I hardly know what to say. The time has just flown. The two of you are just wonderful, and your music is loved today. Like 45 years later, people still love the music of Paul and Paula. Thank you, thank you, thank you both.
Thanks, Ronnie Allen from Paul and Paula, and thanks, everybody. It was a hoot. And we'd do it again, wouldn't we, Paula?
We sure would.
Okay, let's do it about an hour from now. No, I'm only kidding. We're going to close with a song that reflects the way I feel. It's called My Happiness. Many of you know the song as having been a big hit by Connie Francis, but did you know that back in the 40s, it was originally a big hit by John and Sandra Steele? And I just want to say the two of you do a great version of this song called My Happiness. Good night, Paul.
Good night.
And good night, Paula.
Good night.
I reminisce, dreaming of your tender kiss, always thinking how I miss my happiness. A million since we've shared our dreams, but I'll hold you again. There'll be no blue memories then.
Every day.
That's the show, and now a couple of bonus tracks by Paul and Paula. Leading off with a song called Blue Roller Ring, and there's some great harmony on this by Shelby Singleton's wife, Margie Singleton. Finally, here's an up-tempo Paul and Paula song. Clap your hands and tap your toes to Oh, What a Love.
Oh, what a love, my love. Makes me feel so glad. Oh, what a love, my love. Feel bad. We were walking down the street today, hand in hand, life was oh so gay. Oh, what a day. Oh, what a love. So glad.
Oh, what a love I love. I never feel bad.